Peleliu, just inside the Palau Reef, is shaped like a lobster's claw, extending two arms of land. The southern arm reaches northeastward from flat ground to form a jumble of coral islets and tidal flats, overgrown thickly with mangroves. The longer northern arm is dominated by the parallel coral ridges of Umar Brogel Mountain. North to south, the island is about 6 miles long, with a width of approximately 2 miles. On the wide, largely flat southern section, the Japanese had constructed an airfield shaped roughly like the numeral 4. The ridges and most of the island outside the airfield were thickly wooded. There were only occasional patches of wild palms and open grass areas. The thick scrub so completely masked the true nature of the terrain that aerial photographs and pre-D-Day photos taken by United States submarines gave intelligence officers no hint of its ruggedness. The treacherous reef along the landing beaches and the heavily defended coral ridges inland made the invasion of Peleliu a combination of the problems of Tarawa and of Saipan. The reef, over 600 yards long, was the most formidable natural obstacle. Because of it, troops and equipment making the assault had to be transported in Amtraks. Higgins' boats could not negotiate across the rough coral and the varying depths of water. Before leaving Pavuvu, we had been told that the 1st Marine Division would be reinforced to about 28,000 men for the assault on Peleliu. As every man in the ranks knew, however, a lot of those people included in the term reinforced were neither trained nor equipped as combat troops. They were specialists attached to the division to implement the landing and supply by working on ships and later on the beaches. They would not be doing the fighting. Upon sailing for Peleliu, the 1st Marine Division numbered 16,459 officers and men. A rear echelon of 1,771 remained on Pavuvu. Of these, only about 9,000 were infantrymen in the 3 infantry regiments. Intelligence sources estimated that we would face more than 10,000 Japanese defenders on Peleliu. The big topic of conversation among us troops had to do with those comparative strengths. "Hey, you guys, the lieutenant just told me that the 1st Division is going to be the biggest Marine division to ever make a landing. He says we got reinforcements we never had before." A veteran looked up from cleaning his .45 automatic and said, "Boy, has that shave-tail lieutenant been smoke-stacking you."
"Why?"
"Use your head, buddy. Sure, we got the 1st Marines, the 5th Marines, and the 7th Marines. Them's infantry. The 11th Marines is our division artillery. Where the hell's all them people who is supposed to reinforce the division? Have you seen them? Who the hell are they? And where the hell are they?"
"I don't know. I'm just telling you what the lieutenant said."
"Well, I'll tell you who them reinforcements is. That's all what they call specialists. They ain't line company Marines. Remember this, Buster. When the stuff hits the fan and you and me are trying to live through that shooting and the shelling, them damn specialists'll be setting on they cans back at Division CP, command post, on the beach, writing home about how war is hell. And who is going to have all the casualties and lose all the men fighting the Nips? The 1st Marines, the 5th Marines, and the 7th Marines will all catch hell, and the 11th Marines will lose some men, too. Wake up, boy. Them shave-tail lieutenants is as useless as tits on a boar hog. The NCOs run things when the shooting starts." During World War II, amphibious planners considered the safe ratio of attackers to defenders in an amphibious assault to be 3-to-1. To the leaders at Peleliu, the total Marine force of 30,000 provided a safe margin over the Japanese. Although at least one regimental commander, the redoubtable Colonel Lewis B. Chesty Puller, pointed out the disparity in actual combat forces, The division's commander, Major General William H. Rupertus, and his staff believed his fears were groundless.